Hello and welcome to The Laydown, a podcast where three booksellers from Gibson's Bookstore in Concord, New Hampshire chat about all things literary. My name is Ryan.
I'm Hillary.
And I'm Kelso.
We made it. We did it.
Yes.
We got through the craziness that was 2020. And this is the first episode of our third season.
Yeah.
Somehow.
Oh my
God. This is our third year doing this already. It's the first episode of 2021, and we're going to, you know, recap 2020 a little bit. We're going to talk a little bit about our favorite books of last year, and you know, recommend all the good stuff to our lovely listeners. But before we do that, let's talk a little bit about what we've been reading recently, kicking off the new year. What have I been reading? I'm still reading A Marvelous Light by Freya Marsk, which our lovely coworker Joe lent to me with like white knuckled, "I want this back, please, when you're done." and I was like, I promise. So I've been reading that, but like savoring it because it's really, really delicious. It's a magician and a non-magician who are sort of thrown together. So you have one character, he is like on his way to start a new job, and it's like a government job. It's like, oh, whatever. Like, he's, you know, not really sure what to expect. It's like going to be office work or something. And he gets accosted by some guys, and they're just like, they have this like mist, like in front of their face, this like cloudy fog in front of their face. And they like ask him a bunch of questions that he doesn't know the answer to, and then they put a curse on him, and he's like, cool, what just happened? And then you have the other main character is a magician who goes and he sort of like works alongside the office that this character has just started his job at. And he's like, so you're cursed? Okay, we're going to figure this out. And he's like, so magic is real. Okay, let's start there. And the two of them sort of hate each other at first. It's that delicious trope of enemies to lovers. They're not quite enemies, but, you know, they're not besties when it starts. And then in the process of trying to figure out this curse and what is going on and who are these people and why are they asking all these questions that no one knows the answers to, like what is going on, they bond and they start to fall in love, and it's so gay and cute, and the descriptions of their forearms are enough to make you sweat. Like, it's it's so well written, right? Yeah, it's so well written. And like the magic is really cool. Like they do this sort of like cradling thing. So picture like someone doing a cat's cradle. Like, that's how they do magic. They like do these like intricate hand gestures. And so some magicians will actually use a piece of string, like a cat's cradle. So this magician, he doesn't have a lot of magic in him. He's not a very powerful magician, but he's really smart and he's really good at like creating spells. It's a very sort of like strange and normal situation where like you have someone who's like really good at like the practicalities of it, but mm-hmm. not as good at the like actually doing it part. It's like the theory of it, they're like brilliant, and then the execution is like less so. It's really, really sweet and fascinating, and just it's gonna be, that comes out in November of this year. And that's called A Marvelous Light, and Marvelous has two L's. And it is so good, and everyone needs to keep an eye on it. As we're recording this, they're going to be releasing the cover image tomorrow, and I'm so excited to see it. And then, oh, I am listening to the newest Max Brooks book. So he wrote World War Z, and his most recent one is called Devolution, and it's about Bigfoot. It's so good.
About this before.
Yes, and it was one of those books where I was like,
it's brutal, World War
Z, but like,
I'm telling you, if you
loving it,
your stomach to listen to this book.
Oh yeah, it's gruesome.
It's gruesome.
Yeah. Yeah. These big-footed creatures do not mess around. They are they will tear you limb from limb, and it will be described in detail. It's really good. It's sort of I would say it's set up the same way that World War Z was, with like the different, there's like journalists like talking entry. And diary entries and recordings and like all these things sort of like mishmashed together into a cohesive storyline. I definitely was like, Bigfoot, really? We're going with Bigfoot? Okay. And it's awesome. It's really good. I was listening to it in the car on the drive home, and there was like a description that made me full body tighten, cringe, like, oh god. It's like, oh, I hate picturing this. Yeah. So highly recommend for all of my horror listeners. I know Erica Robin is gonna love this one. But what have you guys been reading this year so far?
I am starting a couple of books. One I don't know anything about. The one that I don't know anything about, and I'm trying to keep it that way because I know Hillary has read it, is Parable of the Sower by Octavia Butler.
No, I have not read that.
No? And I remember long ago we read Kindred in book club, and that lit a fire under my bum because, man, that I think about that book at least once a week. I love that book. It's my favorite book. So I was like, I should really read more Octavia Butler. And that had always been playing in the background of my mind. And then ever since the first week of January, where all of that political stuff has happened, I kept seeing like online memes about like how Octavia Butler was right and that it was about this book. And
oh, wow.
Really?
Really good. Everybody's been comparing it to like 1984 Handmaid's Tale and stuff. And everyone's like, no, Octavia Butler got it right. And I didn't know anything about the book. I'm like, okay, got to read this book. And I read the back cover. The book starts in 2024. So far I've only read like the first 20 pages of it. The book starts in 2024 with this young Black woman. She's like 10 or 12, and she has this, what they perceive as a disease, where she feels empathy for other people, but like if somebody is bleeding on the side of the road, she actually starts bleeding herself. She can feel it. And it's a disease, and 2024 happens. They all live in like these big fancy gated communities, and the outside world is just destroyed by different politicians, and there's no water, there's no gas. People used to have electricity, and everything is way too expensive for people to afford things. People are dying in the streets. It's like very gruesome, and it's pretty scarily accurate, as if we do not change our ways in the US now, that we could actually become this. It's really eerily scary. You know, I don't want to get into too much detail because it gets really dark really fast. But she, right now, she has to bike with her family members and her little tribe from the outside of her gated community walls to a church where her dad is a Baptist at, so she can get baptized. And she runs through people who are homeless on the side of the street, who are on drugs, who are dying. And she's trying to look ahead, because if she looks at these people, she'll succumb to their hurt and her desire. So it's a really well done book, and I love Octavia Butler so much. And it's just a fabulous book so far. And I don't know anything else about the book, but it gets a lot better and it gets a lot darker, but it gets a lot cooler too, according to a lot of the people I talked to on the internet about it. So this is, I guess, first out of a two book series, but I don't know anything about this book. And I forgot how much I love reading books where I have no idea what I'm walking into.
Yes, me too.
But my problem is, like, when I have to explain the book and I've only read like 15 pages, I'm like, I don't know where this is going. But people who are listening to this podcast who have read this book, they know I'm in for a good treat. And yeah. I feel like a lot of people who have not read this book should also be reading this book, because it's really scary how close to home it is hitting. That's the first one I'm reading. The second one is called One Last Stop by Casey McQuiston.
Oh, how is that? I've been meaning to read that.
This is adorable. Again, I'm about like 30 pages into it. I just started picking up books.
I love Casey.
And she wrote Red, White, and Royal Blue, which was a big runaway hit over the summer, two summers ago. This is her second one. This is about two lesbians. They're in New York City. One is named August. She's cynical. She doesn't really believe in much. She just like goes through her days. She really likes fried chicken. And there's this other woman she meets, meet cutes on the subway. Her name is Jane. She's like a soft butch kind of character. She's very edgy. She wears like a leather jacket. She's very punk, and doesn't take crap from anybody. And she keeps seeing her on the subway. And then she realizes that Jane is actually stuck in time. She's actually from 1970.
What?
So it's the story of the storyline of Kate and Leopold. If you've ever heard that story,
where
the person is stuck in time and he needs to get back home. It's basically that, but lesbians.
And it's, I love that.
Super cute and super sweet. And I've had a couple people who have read it told me to pick this up because you remind me so much of Jane. You have like this cute edge to you. I'm like,
that's so cute.
So I was like, fine, I'll read it. It's a romance book, but fine. But it's really good. I think this might be better than Red, White, and Royal Blue. Not gonna lie. It's super cute. It's super adorable. And it's a good kind of palate cleanser between the edginess of my first read. So balancing it out.
That sounds awesome.
What are you reading?
Well, I am trying to make a deal with myself to read more thinky books this year. Because I think I spent last year just binging Libro FM potboilers that were so of a kind. I don't even remember the plots of most of them. Did I read that? I think I did read that. You know, does she turn out to be crazy in the end? And she's actually the secret murderer, even though she, you know, those kind of, I just listened to so many of those because they were such an escape from reality and I really needed them. So I think I'm ready to get a little more engaged. So what I'm reading right now is a surprise bestseller. George Saunders' book, A Swim in a Pond in the Rain. Okay, so George Saunders is a very well-known writer who is mostly well-known for his short stories. They're very hard to, well, he also wrote Lincoln in the Bardo. That's probably what
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so he's a literary writer of, he writes things that push the edges of realism sometimes, but they're always about sort of normal people having to step up in amazing kinds of ways. His short stories are well known for that sort of a plot. And he's a well-known teacher of writing as well. And so this book is based on the classes that he teaches at Syracuse University. And the subtitle of it is in which four Russians give a masterclass on writing, reading, and life. And so this is such a brilliant idea. Because all these Russians have been dead for a zillion years, all of these stories are out of copyright, so he can use them.
Cool.
Every chapter incorporates an actual short story by a famous Russian writer.
That's cool.
You have to start by reading that, and then he goes in and explains why it's brilliant in some way, and how it works as a short story. So anybody who's interested in writing or doing deeper dive into reading, this is such a great book. It feels to me like I'm going back 20 years to my MFA program. You know, there's something very intellectually exciting about it. And amazingly enough, it's wound up on the New York Times nonfiction bestseller list. It incorporates stories by Chekhov, Turgenev, Tolstoy, and Gogol. And I'm only into the very first story, first part of it, but I'm enjoying it immensely. So if you want to do some thinking about how fiction works, mm-hmm. I highly recommend George Saunders' A Swim in a Pond in the Rain. And then for fun, I'm reading a book by Ellie Griffiths called The Postscript Murders. Mm-hmm. Ellie Griffiths is a well-known writer of mysteries. She's won lots of, you know, Edgar Awards and things like that. She's a lot of fun. She's a British writer. She's published, you know, 9 gabillion mysteries. Mm-hmm. And this one is about a woman who is very elderly, who dies of a heart attack. And then her friends decide, we think she might've been murdered. And she is a woman who advised mystery authors on how to kill people off. And she had at one point probably been some kind of a covert agent during the Cold War. And maybe she was an assassin. You don't really know exactly what's going on. But it's, if you enjoy that kind of light touch, kind of cozy, but a little thrillery, British mystery, this is coming out March 2nd.
Cool.
Ellie Griffiths, The Postscript Murders. And then the last thing I'm reading right now is called The Agitators, Three Friends Who Fought for Abolition and Women's Rights by Dorothy Wickenden. Dorothy Wickenden is the executive editor of the New Yorker magazine, and she hosts their weekly podcast, The Political Scene, which I listen to religiously. And this book is about three friends. One was Harriet Tubman, one was Martha Coffin Wright, and one was Frances Seward. And these are three women who fought for abolition during the Civil War era. And Harriet Tubman, you may know, is a famous spy for the North and who went back into the South on multiple occasions and helped people escape. Dorothy Wickenden's really brilliant woman and a really good writer. And this is terrific historical nonfiction that is coming out also in March, March 30th, The Agitators by Dorothy Wickenden.
Nice. All right. So 2020 was, you know, 2020, but it was a good year for books.
I think books saved the world.
Yeah. And so I read like 60 something books last year, which is not bad considering I also gave birth and had to deal with a newborn and all that good stuff. And I started writing down my like favorite books of 2020, and the list just kept going. So there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12.
And I think I wound up with 15.
Yeah. And I think Kelso had 11, something like that. So, you know, I probably won't go in depth on them. I'll just shout out some titles here. Before I get to like my number one, like favorite book of the year, I just want to like run down my list. And of course, you know, we talked about these books over the course of last year. But just to sort of highlight some of the amazing books I read last year, The House in the Cerulean Sea by T.J. Clune. I just got a shout out again, especially after a year like 2020, what a just heartwarming, cozy hug of a book. This book, it's an adult book, but it has the vibe of a middle grade fantasy. Like, it's just wholesome, right? Like, it's, you know, you've got this guy stuck in this sort of dead end corporate-y type government job. It's very dry, it's very boring, and he is such a stickler for the rules. Like, he himself is just so forgettable and boring because he just does everything by the book. And because of this, he gets picked to go check up on this kind of secret, like top secret government project type thing. They're like, yeah, we can't really give you a lot of details, but like, you got to go check up on this house, this orphanage. And he's like, okay. His job is sort of, he's a social worker basically, but again, it's like the most dry type thing, but like, he really loves kids. Like, he tries to, you know, speak to their humanity while also really sticking to all of the rules. So he goes to check out this orphanage, and his whole thing is that they check up on these kids who have magical abilities to make sure that they're, you know, being taken care of, but also not like causing issues, right? They're a little bit swept under the rug. And this house, this orphanage is, well, one of the kids is the Antichrist. So it's a little different from the other houses he's visited. There's a kid who's just a gelatinous blob. They don't really know what he is. He wants to be a butler so badly. Like, that's his dream in life. He just wants to be a butler at a hotel. He's this gelatinous blob. Is she a gnome? Yeah, there's a gnome, like a garden gnome. And she like tries to murder him as soon as he arrives at the house with her like tiny shovel. She's like whacking at his knees. It is the most adorable cast of magical kids. And the gentleman who runs this orphanage is such a warm, just awesome guy. Like, he just loves these kids so much, and he just wants to do right by them. And the two characters form a really beautiful bond, and the kids come to really love him. And it is just, it's just really sweet. It is just like, you just want to like curl up with this book under a blanket and a mug of hot cocoa and just like read it in one sitting. Like, it is just so good for your soul to read that book. So like, highly recommend, top of the list. You gotta read that book.
Right. I think I've told you this, but remember a year, whole year ago when we went to Winter Institute?
Yes.
And we all got to go out to dinners with authors.
Yes.
And TJ Klune was at my dinner. And I have to say, I hadn't read the book at that time, but he is exactly like you would think he is. Like, he was just like, hello, it is so great to meet you. This is amazing. I'm so like, he was like the sweetest human being you could imagine. Amazing. So yeah, it's great that he has gotten really good reviews and there's a lot of love for that book.
That's amazing. I really love, he's got another book called The Extraordinaries, which is about like superheroes, and it's a really, really great like coming of age story. I really loved that one too. So I really love TJ Klune. If you want just like really sweet, uplifting books, go for TJ Klune.
Has he got something coming out soon?
I think
Cassie, you're saying yes.
Yeah, I think he just
called Under the Whispering Door.
Thank you. Yes. Yeah. So yes. So that's at the top of my list. Some other ones, Such a Fun Age by Kylie Reed, really, really intense, but really good book that tackles racial injustices.
Kelso and I are nodding along here.
Yeah, that's a great book. The Unwilling by Kelly Braffitt. If you're into high fantasy, that's a fantastic book. The Sword in the Stars by A.R. Capetta and Corey McCarthy, which is the completion of their duology. Is it going to be a trilogy or is it just a duology? I can't remember now. But it's their King Arthur series. And the first one is Once in Future. And the sequel is The Sword in the Stars. And it is gender-bent gay King Arthur in space. It's amazing. The City We Became by N.K. Jemisin. Oh, I think you both are probably going to also mention that one. We've gushed about that one a bunch on the podcast, particularly the audiobook of that one. Oh my goodness.
So highly recommended.
That's my favorite audiobook of the year, bar none.
I think incredible. I agree.
Yeah. A Song Below Water by Bethany C. Morrow is a really, really beautiful YA about sirens and other fantastical creatures, but it also deals with Black Lives Matter movement and protests, and it is simultaneously like really, really intense and also really beautiful and sweet, and there's some romance and there's family stuff, and it is just like I really loved that book. It kind of came out of nowhere for me. It was on my Libra FM list and I was like, oh, this looks interesting. What's this? And I clicked on it and I think I listened to it in one sitting. Like, I couldn't stop. Really, really beautiful book.
Can I just throw in a pitch for her book, Mem?
Oh, that's right. I forgot she wrote that.
Amazing. That was, I think, her first book.
And yeah.
A very small, I don't want to even describe it. It's just, it is such a lovely science fiction fantasy, highly challenging philosophically book.
Mm.
You know, will take you like a half a day to read it.
Yeah.
M.E.M. by Bethany Morrow.
Mm.
Excellent.
Oh, that's a good shout out. Another sequel that I loved, A Beautifully Foolish Endeavor by Hank Green, completing his duology, The Carls. Of course, the first one, An Absolutely Remarkable Thing. The sequel, A Beautifully Foolish Endeavor. Amazing, amazing, amazing. It improves upon the first one, which I didn't think was possible because, you know, longtime listeners of the pod will remember that was my favorite book of 2018. And we got to interview him this year virtually, and hopefully someday in the future we will have him in person, because he was a delight. Another great one, You Should See Me in a Crown by Leah Johnson, was a really sweet YA book about prom, and just, it was just sweet. It was fun. It was upbeat. And again, like, tackled some racial inequality and things like that in a really, like, cool way, in a really great, great YA book. Highly recommend. Wonderland by Zoya Stage. She wrote Baby Teeth. This one was very creepy, and it was the type of book where, like, I felt like the book itself was closing in on me as I read it. It was very, like, it's not haunted house, because it's not the house that's the issue. It's like the woods around the house. Like, there's something going on there. And it's very like, is someone being possessed? Is the main character crazy? Is it all in her head? What's going on with her family? Why can't she leave her house? Like, what is going on? She's being snowed in, but when they call family to find out what's going on with this crazy storm that's happening, they're like, what are you talking about? There's no storm. Like, it's the type of book that, like, it makes you feel crazy while you're reading it. It is really, really well written, and oh, but my god,
like Burnt Offerings, remember
that? Yes,
you know, it was, yes, such a stab in the heart, that book. Oh my, yes, god, it was.
Yeah, not for the faint of heart.
Oh, no. Yeah. No, not at all.
Yeah. But especially parents. Parents, beware. Oh,
God.
Yeah. But it is really, really good. Another great horror.
Yeah. Excellent horror.
Excellent horror novel. Another horror adjacent, I'd say, Plain Bad Heroines. Loved that.
That's
one.
That's on my list, too.
Yeah.
Is that on your scale, so?
Yeah, I think we all really loved that one. If any of our listeners have not yet bought Plain Bad Heroines, how dare you?
Do it. Do it. Why are you waiting?
It's really...
It's the intersection of me and Kelso and Ryan. It's really, yes, interesting.
It is. It has something for everyone. It is gay. It is spooky. It's also kind of funny. It has history, not real history, but history.
It's very literary. She is so intrigued, yeah, about 19th century literature. It is, yes, amazing.
It is. Oh gosh, I don't even know. It has multiple timelines. It's got the past. It's got the present. It's got horror movies.
Social media.
It's got social media. It's got everything, and it's so beautifully written. It is. It is such a literary horror, right? Like,
yeah, it's great. It's a classic. I think it's an instant classic.
I think it could. Yeah. Yeah. Loved that one. Hench by Natalie Zena Walshots, which our coworker Elizabeth just finished, and she was texting me. She was so happy. I kept telling her to read it, because I was like, you love superheroes, you love villains, you love backstory, you love romance, you will love this book. Not that there's a romance, but like, it has some of the like tropey aspects of some of her favorite romance novels. I was like, you're gonna love this book. And she did. It's really fun. It's, you know, it starts out with this woman who is a henchman for a villain, and she gets caught in the crossfires of a superhero attack. I'll say attack because she's on the villain side. So, you know, depending on who's watching, it was either like a good thing or a bad thing, right? That this hero came crashing in, and like, she gets annihilated basically by this hero. It's like she was hit by a truck, and she has to do this like really intense, you know, she breaks a ton of bones. Her leg is like shattered basically, and like really intense recovery, and she starts to look into sort of the cost of superheroes, right? So when they're saving people, how much damage are they doing to civilians and henchmen? And she starts to calculate the cost, right? Because she's calculating her own like medical bills and being out of work and like all this stuff. And she's like, well, I mean, this one attack cost me this much. Like, how much are they costing like the city and like civilians and things like that? And she, in figuring these things out, she gets kind of like taken in by this, like the villain, like the big bad hires her, and gives her like full benefits and like, you know, here, you can have this like cushy office job. And I want you to like figure out the cost of this and figure out how we can use that to take down superheroes. It's awesome. It is awesome. It is, it's exciting. It's a little graphic, but not too bad. You know, they describe the injuries, but not in a way that's like too cringy. There's, I would say instead of romance, there's like a respect and adoration where there would normally be a romance plot. It has like the same kind of like buildup, but instead of being like, I'm romantically attracted to this person, it's just like, wow, I really admire this person. And I really respect them as just a human. It is really good. I loved it so much. And I can't wait to just hand sell the crap out of it this year. Like, it's so great, especially anyone who has watched the series The Boys will love this book. It's incredible. And then to wrap it up, my number one book of 2020, my favorite book of 2020 was, of course, The Invisible Life of Addie LaRue by V.E. Schwab. Holy guacamole, what a gorgeous book. I don't even know if I can coherently talk about how much I love this book. It is just so beautiful. So just a reminder, I think I've talked about it a bunch on the podcast, and I think you guys have as well, but Addie LaRue, she wants to escape her life. She doesn't like her life. She doesn't want to marry the guy that she's supposed to marry, you know, that she's being pushed into. She doesn't.
And it's the 1700s.
I think so. Yeah. Yeah. It's old school. And, you know, and she's like a feminist, right? Like, she doesn't want to live this like housewife, have a bunch of babies, stay home and do housework. Like, she doesn't want to do that. And so she, makes a deal with a very dark creature, whether it's the devil or a devil. She makes a deal with the darkness. And essentially, the deal boils down to she will live until she is done with her life, but no one will remember her. And quite literally, the second she leaves someone's line of sight, she is forgotten. She has never existed to them. And she lives this way for centuries. And it's heartbreaking to read, you know, she goes back to like her family home and her father has no idea who this strange woman is in tattered clothing. Like, get off my porch. Like, who are you? She goes to like her childhood best friend's home and same thing. She's cast out. They don't know who she is. And she lives this way for centuries, learning to use this to her advantage, to steal things so that she can, you know, survive, but she can't die, right? But she can be real uncomfortable. and she can't leave a mark on the world. She can't write things down. It disappears. The ink doesn't stay. But she starts to realize that she can subtly influence things. She can subtly influence art and music and paintings and little things she can sort of like, I don't know, she finds ways to kind of like leave her mark a little bit. And then in modern day, she meets a guy who remembers her. And it is, and that like kicks off just the greatest story, because there's something going on with him too. There's something interesting about him as well, that she's not quite sure what's going on, but he remembers her, and they meet in a bookstore of all places. And basically she takes a book and he chases her out onto the street being like, hey, you're going to pay for that. And she's like, I'm sorry, what? You remember me? Like, what's going on? And then she goes back the next day and he remembers her again. And it's the first time since she made this deal that someone has ever remembered her. And it is, this book is, it's literary, it's gorgeous, it's a masterpiece. It's the type of book where you hit a point, probably like, I don't know, a few chapters in, where like you cannot put it down. From that point forward, you're like, well, now I'm sitting here and I'm finishing this book because I can't stop. It is beautiful, and it just sweeps you away. It sweeps you off your feet. And Addie LaRue is unforgettable despite her curse. She is amazing. So huge props to V.E. Schwab. This is her masterpiece. I love V.E. Schwab. I think she's written a lot of great books, but like this is like nothing comes close. This book is unbelievable. So that was my number one favorite book of 2020. I can't wait to read it again. I want to reread it now knowing the whole story. I want to start over at the beginning and read it all over again. It's that type of book. So highly, highly, highly recommend. That's going to be the one that I'm shoving into people's hands this year. That's going to be my, you know, if last year was the year of the Starless Sea, this year is going to be the year of Addie LaRue, because I want everyone to read this book. So,
you know, what I love about Addie LaRue too, is, you know, there's so often books that you like a lot and then you get to the end and you're very disappointed in the way it ends. Mm-hmm. I was not disappointed at all.
Yeah.
Like the ending so worked.
Yes.
And I through the whole book, I was like, how is she going to finish this off? Mm-hmm. And she stuck it. She really sticks it, you know?
I agree. I was like, there were parts where I was nervous about what the ending was going to be. I was like, oh, is this heading in a direction that I'm going to be really upset? And no, I was thrilled with the way she wrapped everything up. It was, yeah, agree. So yeah, that's my huge list. Who wants to go next?
Kelso.
All right. I'll go next. So it's weird because I feel like I didn't read enough like I normally do.
Yeah, right.
Of everything.
Yeah.
But now we're talking about all of these books. And so I picked 11 originally because I had to cull them down somehow. So yeah. I originally picked 11. And then we're talking about books that I totally forgot. Like Lincoln the Bardo, I read over the summer. I was like, oh my gosh, I felt like I read that 2 years ago. That's an amazing book, you know, or like Addie LaRue, that came out, like I read that in January of last year, you know, and I keep forgetting my timeline is all bonkers. So there are plenty of books that apparently I've read this year that I completely forgot, like everybody else does. So originally I did 11. I have all 11 on my social medias. I'm not going to try to talk about all of them for the interest of time, and I can get very boring. I will talk about 5, but I'm going to just ring off the other ones that I have on my list. Real Life by Brandon Taylor. Mm. I got to meet him before the pandemic hit. He was supposed to win the Booker for this book because it's super gosh darn amazing. And I'm mad. I'm mad at the Booker. They are on my my garbage list now. This amazing book. And Brandon is wonderful. He reminds me of like Frog and Toad.
Aww.
He's just this very sweet, very queer, very funny man. And he was very nice when I got to meet him. So real life was excellent. I love the author. I took an online class on essay writing over the summer too for a weekend. And they recommended this book called Close to the Knives, A Memoir of Disintegration by David, Wojnarowicz.
Okay.
Wojnarowicz. This is like on the list because, you know, I have to keep up my smart MFA to keep those folks happy. So this is very good.
It's for those of you who take my Alexander Chi recommendation.
Right. Exactly. Yes.
For the ones who want to read Alexander Chi-esque books, this is one of those types. He actually recommended it in the class. And it is a bonkers essay. I don't even know. It's like train of thought essays about a gay man in the 80s during the AIDS pandemic. He writes about his friends dying. It's sad, but it's wonderful. It's wonderfully written. If you like, you know, fancy books like that. Anyways, that's a good book. Pizza Girl by Jean Young Fraser. Mm. This was very short and very sweet. Yeah, like it's about a pregnant teenager who doesn't know what she wants to do in life. She works as pizza delivery. She starts to befriend a young woman who likes pickles on her pizza. And they talk about life and what she might want to do. It is very Juno-esque.
Cute.
It was adorable. Written by a gay woman. Very good book.
Nice.
I think you might have this on your list, Hillary. It's These Women.
Oh, I do.
Yeah, I'm not going to talk about this, but this was excellent.
Just showing her. Are These Women.
Yeah, These Women was excellent. Very character driven. Wonderful. Lindsay Ellis wrote Acting
Men.
Yes.
I like that very much. I almost put that on my list.
It's great. And I love her. I liked her. I didn't realize when this book came out that she was the nostalgia chick from like back in the day. And so I didn't make the connection. So I started looking her up and I'm like, why does this name sound familiar? And it's her. She did this wonderful video essay on my favorite movie, Showgirls, back in the day, which don't watch that movie. But she did a video essay on my favorite movie, Showgirls. And then she wrote these books and they're wonderful. And if you like big mecha anime, like I do, like robots, this is a good book. You should read it.
Yeah, I enjoyed it a lot.
Yeah, I liked Axiom's End a lot. I did
the second one I pre-ordered yesterday. I think it's going to be
a sequel to it.
Yeah,
coming out because they left it open.
Yay!
They left it open. I was like, girl, you need to be writing this next book. So it's coming out. City We Became.
Yeah.
Denison. We already talked about it. Fabulous. Freaking read that book. Oh my gosh. Okay. So now we got to go to the five. The first one I want to talk about is True Grit by Charles Portis. I read this over the summer because I wanted to read something that would just take my mind off of everything. And I wanted to read something good on vacation. And this has an introduction by Donna Tartt, who is one of my favorite authors of all time. So I was like, all right, I got to read it because she really likes this book. I'll read it. It's fascinating. I'd never read this book and I wanted to watch the movie. The book is obviously better than the movie. It's about this 14-year-old girl. Her name is Maddie Ross. She's the most well-written character in any literary history, bar none. She's sassy and clever and smart. And
like father, what, 13 or 14?
She's 14. Yeah. She's the best kid ever. And I wish I read this when I was like 14 because I would have related so much to her, like such a kinship with Maddie in this book. She's just whip smart and funny and like dark humored and just thinks she knows it all.
And stubborn.
Yeah. I loved her character. What a good character.
Yeah.
Wow. So her in the first part of the first three pages of this book, her father is shot dead by this scoundrel named Tom Chaney, and she goes to try to find him and kill him as revenge. It's a revenge book. And she enlists the help of a marshal named Rooster Cogburn. And man, those two together are super freaking funny. And I won't give away the ending, but it's pretty short. It's only like 210 pages or so, but it reads real fast. Best Western I've ever read. Classic for a reason. It was one of my staff picks over the summer. Wonderful, wonderfully well-written book. Stands up after 50 plus years after Charles Portis wrote this book.
Have you read News of the World?
I haven't.
Because if you like True Grit, News of the World by Paulette Giles, you should really read. Oh, and it's just been, the Tom Hanks movie that has just come out.
I was curious about that because I saw it on our paperback bestseller list. So I will keep that in mind.
Yeah, that's been one that's been like on the tables, I feel like, since it came out.
Yeah, it keeps selling. It's a steady seller at work. And it's one of those things like, I'll read it eventually. Just like the True Grit book. Like I was I'll read it eventually. And I did. And it was wonderful. Second book I want to talk about. Under the Rainbow by Celia Latsky. I read this over the summer. I needed to read something gay because I just read gay books all the time. Celia is a lesbian author and I'm like, heck yeah, let's do it. This one is about it's about a group of social activists, LGBTQIA plus social activists that arrive in the small town of Big Burg, Kansas, which is deemed the most homophobic town in America. And they're trying to connect with the local people and show that like homosexuality is fun and there should be progress to this. The book is so well written. It reminds me of like, if you really like Queer Eye, where, you know, you have to change the minds and the hearts and win the hearts of people over. And you want a good cry about it, you should really read this book. It's really similar. It was wonderful. The characters are really well thought out. It was just really heartwarming. I read it around when the pandemic started. And it was something that was heartbreaking, but it wasn't overly saccharine sweet either.
Okay.
I really connected with one of the characters in this book. I won't tell you who because I'll start crying about it. but it was like the first book we read when everything started to shut down. I started to panic and it was a really good balm for what ailed me way back in the spring. And that's Under the Rainbow by Celia Latsky. So, so, so good. Scapegracers by Hannah Abigail Clark, which is a YA book. Her second book is coming out, I believe, this year in the series.
Ooh.
This one was adorable. It's very dark, but it's YA, so it's not that dark. This one is about an outcast lesbian teenage witch who finds her coven amongst these popular girls in high school. And then they start doing like serious hexing on the patriarchy. It's super sapphic. It's really well written. Hannah really does a good job with describing sapphic lust as a teenager. They are really... It's really dark and alternative. If you ever had a Hot Topic phase, you're gonna love this book. Like that's just, I don't like, that's it. That's the tweet. Like if you,
he's gonna love this book.
Right. Like if you had like My Chemical Romance emo phase and are a lesbian and you want to relive that kind of like angsty, lesbian sapphic longing with your best friends, like this is it. This is the book. Like, and it's a series. It's YA. So you can give it to your, you know, sapphic lesbian daughter.
Teenage friends. Or
teenager.
Oh my God. That's funny. In my TBR for so long. And it's so funny because I had been like, I really want an arc of this. Like, I'm so excited. Like, all my friends are reading it. I really want an arc of it. And I finally got an arc of it. And then I was just organizing my books like last week and I found another copy of it. Like, I'd had it all along and didn't realize it. So I could have read it so long ago.
That's
but
okay. You know,
anyway, I'm excited to read it.
This is the book that I have been pressing into the hands of my lesbian friends mm-hmm. all like year. Yeah. So this is my most hand sold book this year.
Nice.
And Hannah is great. You should follow them on Twitter. They're really funny. They're into possums right now. And they're
oh, I think I've seen some of these posts. I recognize the possum thing.
Yeah, they're great. They're my favorite. They wrote a wonderful Twitter thread a couple weeks ago about butch representation in literature and how we need more of it. Mm-hmm. And they were just so chef's kiss spot on with things like, you should not write your butch characters in a dress. Like, you can, but we're not going to feel comfortable in it. Don't write us that way. If you really want to grab the attention of a butch lesbian in media, write about their hands. Because we love hands. And there is a scene in here where they describe hands.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh. It's so good. Anyways, so that's Scapegracers by Hannah Abigail Clark. It is out now. If you love this, the sequel will be coming out this year. And I just love them. I love them so much. Brightlands.
Ooh, yeah.
By John Fram. This was really good. I knew John. I wanted to follow more gay authors, and last year I followed this person named John, who is a gay writer, and he had a book coming out, and he, why don't you take a read of it? I'm like, sure, okay. So I started reading it, and it's like smack me in the face with just scary Friday Night Lights meets like scary It monster kind of character. Like, it's so scary. It's so scary. This book
intrigued.
This book is about a small town in Texas who loves their football, right? And their mm-hmm. football star, Dylan Whitley, goes missing. Everybody in the town, in this small town, is like, he'll show up eventually. You know how, like, high school boys are like, blah, blah, blah. And so Joel, his brother, who was shamed out of this conservative town that Dylan and him lived in because Joel is gay, he comes back to New York City from New York City back to his hometown in Texas to try to figure out what happened to Dylan. And scary, spooky, ooky, like Garden of Good and Evil, almost like It kind of creature. Like, you get this sense of like impending, something is going on in this town with all of the boys, like the high school boys and girls, but nobody talks about it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this like impending sense of something is coming out of the scary woodworks and in the bayous of this Texas town. And it's definitely creepy. And like other things happen around what happened to Joel when he was younger and why he was shamed out of this town and what he had a maybe criminal past, maybe he didn't. Okay. So there's kind of like this underlying the secret that Joel is keeping, but there's also secrets that the town is keeping from other people. It's very turny and suspenseful and eerie. And my favorite part of this book is that Joel has these nightmares, and he describes these nightmares, and they are I had to leave the lights on for at least a month.
Nice.
Because I was so scared of these nightmarish things that John described in this book. So I emailed John after I read this book. I'm like, this is an amazing book. Holy bananas. You're a big talent. He's like, oh my gosh, thank you. And he's this really quiet Southern boy. And he's just really nice. And I just love him so much. And I can't, it's one of those things, like, you can't believe that a person like John wrote a scary book like this.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. So.
Except that isn't he quoted in some interviews as saying, yeah, basically this is my revenge on my hometown.
Yeah. Like, my favorite thing he had written was he saw that he was selling number one on a big book website. Mm-hmm. And he reposted it the first time it hit number one. He was like, to all of the people in my small hometown growing up who said that I was just going to like wind up working at the local grocery store. And he wrote, how do you want me to make out your book, bitch? <It's> like, John, I love you so much. So he's That's just delightful. Great. Brightlands, it was excellent. It's the best horror book that I've read. Oh, it's a close second, but my number one that I read over and over and over and over during 2020 was Dune.
Oh, yes. I remember you read that a bunch
Wait,
of times.
How did you read that over and over? It's 9 billion pages long.
I am on my sixth read right now.
Holy crow.
Oh, I love this book. I love this book so much. So
it got those sandworms.
Yes. So it started off.
Those sandworms, Kelso.
That's very good. So it started off with my wife 2 years ago. She read Dune. It's one of her favorite books of all time. She continuously kept reading it. And I was like, why do you like this book so much? It's some science fiction-y written by a straight white man from like the 60s. There's so much stuff that's better than that. Why are you reading this? She's like, no, it's like a classic sci-fi book. You need, everybody should read it. I'm like, you know, just scooting her off, right? And then during the pandemic, around like May, my wife wanted for her birthday, she told me, you need to read Dune for my birthday. That will be your birthday gift to me.
Oh, that's cute.
So let's get the book and we'll read it together. And I'm like,
ooh,
that's cute.
Fine, yeah. I'll read
that
this
That is
book.
The best bonding thing. People out there, if you read with your spouse, you fall in love all over again.
Yeah. So, because we were born, we couldn't, you know, we couldn't have a party because right. It was May and during the pandemic and we had shut down the store and I didn't want to like go over to our family member's house. It was just, you know, it's chaotic. And I didn't want to buy her something that she was like, oh, I'm just going to use this for a second. So it was like, Aoife, what do you want for your birthday? And she literally sat down. She's like, I'll get back to you by the end of the day. She came up to me and she goes, what I really want for my birthday is I want you to read with me my favorite book, Dune. And I'm like,
that's so wholesome.
You're lucky I love you.
She's so cute.
She is. And I was like, fine, we will. The whole month of May, we are going to sit down and we will read this book together and we'll talk about it after we read a couple pages. So the whole month of May, we read Dune together and we would read it like we would sit in bed and read it out loud to each other every night. And like, we would sit on the porch and we like hold hands and like read the chapters together. Or like, aww. I would put it down and go like, this thing happened. And she goes, I know, it's great, right? And I'm like, this is fantastic. And she's like, oh yes, I know. So we would fangirl about this book. And and then I told Michael, our store owner, that I was reading Dune. He was like, have you never read Dune before? And I'm like, no. He's like, and you say you're a Star Wars fan and you've never read Dune. Like, this is a classic. And he kept going off about it. And then John, when our adult book buyer heard that I'd never read Dune, I was starting it. And he was like, you're in for a treat. And and Michael, I didn't know how big of a freaking nerd Michael is, but he is a nerd.
What?
Oh my God.
Michael, I know you're listening.
Oh yeah.
He was like,
yeah.
He was like, okay, so after you read this,
Kelso.
I was just like, well, I thought he was more of like, you know, Charles Portis, you know,
not a non-fiction kind of guy.
Dad, like, yeah, dad books. He reads dad books. He reads dad lit. So anyways, I was like, I didn't know he was a big, big nerd about Dune. And he was like, this is one of my favorite books of all time. How could you not read this book? And so I told him, he was like, okay, so after you read Dune, and if you like it, here's the series. And it tells you should read the series like this, but I think you should read it like that. And like, he like weirdly bonded for like a second with me over this series. And I was just like super happy about that. And so Dune is one of these books that connects nerds together.
Hmm.
And it was just, I was so grateful that this book came into my life when it did, because we can talk about Dune and we can talk about Arrakis and we can go over The Spice Must Flow, and this book is a classic, and I feel like a lot of people know everybody talks about Dune. Like, people, mm-hmm. if you want to read like what the book is about, go online, anybody can find it. It is a classic for a reason. There's a reason why it's still in print. It's one of the greatest science fiction books of all time. But the reason why I keep coming back to Dune is because I have such a connection with this book. And now I have a connection, a closer connection with the people around me because of this book.
Yeah.
And that is why Dune is my favorite book of 2020. And that's so why cute. I keep coming back to it. Because especially because we are all so far apart. And my job, I don't get to see the customers anymore. I do online orders and I don't really get to talk to like my coworkers as much. And, mm-hmm. you know, I miss having interactions. And books are one of those really wonderful pieces of magic where you can have these books and just connect with people who you want to connect more to. So for your birthdays this year, you should ask your spouses, or you should ask your friends, ask them to read your favorite book, because it is going to change your life. And Dune has changed my life.
Aww.
And that's why it's my favorite book of 2020. And that was it for me. Hillary, go on, take it.
Follow that, Hillary.
Sorry.
That is like, I'm thinking about all of these books that, you know, like the books that really moved me and changed me.
Yeah.
And maybe that could be our next podcast.
That's a really good idea. Really
embedded themselves in our hearts over our lifetimes. Because I've got a list of those, but I'm not prepared to talk about them right now.
Not yet. We'll save that for that's fitting for February.
Okay. I'm going to zip through my list.
Okay.
And maybe I will linger on some of the ones that I think were super spectacular. But a lot of these I've talked about on previous podcasts.
Yeah.
So I'll go quickly.
Okay.
You know what? The first one I'm going to talk about is one I have not talked about before, because I found this book recently. And it is The Way Back by Gavriel Savit. S-A-V-I-T. Savit wrote Anna and the Swallow Man, which was a very highly regarded book several years ago, which I have not read, but I remember it being highly well reviewed. So this book was it was a finalist for the National Book Award, but as a youth fiction book. So it went right under my radar because I don't really read YA, but I happened to download it on Libro FM, and it is... Okay, I did say, what did we say we love so much on Libro FM this year? It was the N.K. Jemisin.
The City We Became.
I got to say, this is probably equal to that.
Okay. Wow.
On Libro FM, The Way Back by Gavriel Savit. This book is so beautifully written, so sensitive, so lovely, so uplifting. And it's a kid's book. you know, you could read this with your 12-year-old. And your 12-year-old and you will feel just as amazed by the book. It's a fantasy, but it's very serious in the way that Spinning Silver, for example, by Naomi Novik was. Mm-hmm. It takes place in a shtetl in Eastern Europe in the 1800s. There are two sort of young teenagers, maybe they're 12, 13 years old, and they both, in ways that are too complicated to explain right now, get sucked into a battle with death, personified. And they have to journey into the world of demons and outwit death and the demons. Mm-hmm. And it's funny and it's heartbreaking and it is just beautifully written. I can't recommend it more highly. I was just floored by this book. And I usually read literary fiction and I would say, yep, that this qualifies. If you are an adult reader, if you tend in that direction at all, I encourage you to read The Way Back by Gabriel Sauvet. If this had won the National Book Award, I would have thought that's great. He deserves it. It's a beautiful book.
Yeah, I just looked it up on Libre FM because I was like, oh, I got to add that to my list. And the first blurb was like, for fans of Neil Gaiman and Philip Pullman. So
exactly.
Sign me up.
Yep. It, like,
that's awesome.
He is up there with Neil Gaiman and Philip Pullman.
Wow. Has he written anything else? Do you know?
He wrote Anna and the Swallow Man.
Anna and the Swallow Man.
Which was a story about a little girl who is hiding out during World War II in the woods, and a man helps her and takes her in. I don't know the whole story, but and he's an actor.
Okay. You know,
from like Minneapolis or something. Like, wow, talk about a Renaissance man. You know, he's an amazing writer. It's just beautiful.
That's awesome.
Okay, so we've already talked about a bunch of these books but some of them. Plain Bad Heroines, The City We Became, These Women by Ivy Pacoda. Mm-hmm. And I look at the Ivy Pacoda book, These Women, as part of, I think of it as a trilogy. Not a trilogy, but these three books that have so much to do with one another. Mm. So These Women, the other one is Long Bright River by Liz Moore, which came out a year ago. It came out in January of 2020. And then the other one is True Story by Kate Reed Petty. Mm-hmm. So These Women is about women who are being killed by a serial killer. And because they live kind of on the margins, they're not exactly sex workers. They're not exactly, you know, people who have a substance abuse problem, but maybe they are dancers. Maybe they are escorts, you know, but they're sort of on the margins. Maybe they use a little bit of drugs, but they're not necessarily addicts, but they're poor. They're poor women who are marginalized, who are doing the best they can to get by. And they're trying to have fun, you know, they're hanging out with each other and they get killed. Mm-hmm. And over 20 years, several women get killed. And their loved ones won't let it go. Their mothers, their sisters, their friends say, they were killed. You are doing nothing to figure out who killed them. And the cops are just like, well, they're sex workers. They're drug addicts. And they're like, you know what? Even if they were, that should not be your concern.
Yeah.
But you are making assumptions about these people and it's not okay. And it's why it's these women, these women won't let it go.
Hmm.
And they pursue it until they figure out who the heck did it. It is if you're into true crime at all, this book will really resonate with you, but it's also a real like this is a moment of reckoning in our society. And we are all saying, hey, the people in power who tend to be white men often disregard the lives of women of color, people of color, the LGBT community, people who may have substance abuse issues, whatever. Yep. It's not convenient. We're not going to deal with it. Or perhaps you're participating in the abuse of these people. And that's what this book is about. Mm-hmm. So These Women by Ivy Pacoda, but then Long Bright River by Liz Moore is also in the same vein, only in this case, it's about a police officer who's female and her sister who is a sex worker and a substance abuser who goes missing. And the cop sister who is refused promotions because she wants to keep an eye on her sister is afraid that her drug addicted sister has been the victim of a serial killer because of women dying. Mm-hmm. And her fellow police officers refuse to acknowledge that these women are being killed by a serial killer. And so she is determined to find out what happened to her sister. And in the course of the book, you come to understand that this police officer has bought into all of these terrible assumptions about sex workers and drug addicted people and has participated in her own sister's horrible life.
Wow.
It is a heartbreaking book. I feel like I have never read a book that has moved me so much about someone who has substance abuse issues. I highly, highly recommend it. Mm. And then the other one in that sort of triumvirate is True Story by Kate Reed Petty, which is a story about a teenager who seems to have been sexually assaulted during a high school party by boys that are in a team, a sport. And it when the police go after them, there's a huge cover up. And so the boys are protected, the girl's life is kind of ruined. And then you jump forward 20 years and you look at the fallout from all of this. And it's a lot about why people should tell the truth to begin with and not hide and not allow the police or their coaches or whoever to cover up for them because the fallout is worse than telling. It's so good. It's going to be out in paperback soon. I highly recommend that. Okay, so those were those three. I'm just going to quickly mention other ones that I really liked a lot. I've talked a lot about The Cold Millions by Jess Walker. Totally read that book, historical fiction, political, hilarious, heartrending, just a terrific read. Deacon King Kong by James McBride, which is coming out in paperback on February 2nd. We're going to be doing that in our book club in March. Just a terrific book that takes place in the late 1960s in Brooklyn. Sort of a mystery that happens in a Black church. It's just beautifully written and hilarious and wonderful. If you've ever read James McBride, you're going to really appreciate it. Plain Bad Heroines, we've talked about. The City We Became, we've talked about. Piranesi by Susanna Clarke.
Ooh, yes.
Right? I think we all like that a lot. If you read Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell, which was like 9 million pages long, Piranesi is way shorter. it's kind of a mystery, you know, it's really a mystery, but it also has these crazy elements of fantasy. And also, if you are at all into nature writing and books that are about like the sea and the sky and constellations, and like, this book is for you. It is very natural science-y.
Cool.
It, as well as being a mystery. Really terrific and a fast read. The Vanishing Half by Britt Bennett, which is still on the bestseller list. Britt Bennett wrote The Mothers, which we did in our book club recently. She's a terrific writer. This is about two sisters, one of whom passes for white, the other one who doesn't, and how their lives intersect later in life. Afterland by Lauren Bucus, which is a terrific fantasy about a plague that kills 99% of the men left on Earth, and what that does to society. And about a woman who happens to have one of the only boys who has survived this plague, and how she has to dress him up as a girl. And
interesting.
It's excellent. And also I want to say Lauren Bucus, the main character is South African in this book, but she's in the United States. Lauren Bucus is South African. She is the reader who does the Libro.
Oh, cool.
She is so good. It is very unusual for me to recommend an author reading their book.
Yeah.
Lauren Bucus is terrific. Highly recommended as an audiobook.
That's awesome.
Splendid in the Vial by Eric Larson. Mm-hmm. That book bucked me up so much in this plague year. It is about Winston Churchill and his family during the bombing of London. And he had an 18-year-old daughter who kept, who wrote a lot of letters and kept a journal. Mm-hmm. And she puts to shame most writers that currently write. I mean, she was 18 years old and she was an amazing writer. And her description of what was happening is incredible. And it just made me feel like I can get through this. This is nothing compared to what happened
during
World War II. You know, read it and be heartened. And a couple that have really gone under the radar, Enter the Aardvark by Jessica Anthony.
That's a good one.
Many months ago. Enter the Aardvark is a hilarious, tiny book about a terrible Republican congressman, the most corrupt, horrible guy, who is gay, who pretends he's not gay, and whose hidden lover sort of sets him up for being found out in the most ridiculous way. It's really over the top, but it is heartrending and just hilarious and so well researched and so beautifully written. And poor Jessica, this book came out in April, just exactly as coronavirus crashed and burned the publishing industry. Yeah. It was the worst possible moment to have a book come out. And I think this book would have really done a lot better had had it come out at a different time. So give it a whirl. If you like political satire, it is so worth it. And it's historical fiction as well. And then my final one is horror. It's the book You Let Me In by Camilla Bruce, which is basically, it's sort of like Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell meets, I don't know, some... You Let Me In, you know, it's it is about the way it's set up is there's a woman who is like a multimillionaire because she's written a lot of very successful books, and she disappears. And when she disappears, there's a note left behind that says, my estate is left to my niece and nephew. They can inherit it after 1 year if I don't reappear, but they have to do the following before they get it. They have to go to my house and they have to read this file, this memoir that I've left for them. And so they go there, and the memoir is written by this woman who's leaving them all this money, basically saying, the reason I've been able to write all of these super popular books is that I was possessed by an evil fairy.
Oh my God.
And you can decide whether or not to inherit my fortune. And if you believe, you believe. And if you don't believe, like if you believe, you're going to do one thing. If you don't believe, you're going to do another thing.
Wow.
But it is a rough, terrifying, really brilliant book. And she's a Norwegian writer. It's in translation. I don't know how well it sold, but I thought it was freaking amazing and terrifying. So You Let Me In by Camilla Bruce. She actually has another one that's in hardcover right now that is her fictionalization of an actual American murderess.
Whoa.
In the 19th century, which whose name I can't remember, but all right, that's my list.
Awesome. I think we've got some great recommendations in there for our listeners.
I find it interesting. Not only do we have, of course, we were all going to blend stuff in, but I feel like all of us got at least one horror book in this year.
Yes. I was just thinking that too. It was a good year for horror.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was neat. Sorry.
Well, you know, because like, we need horror because our life is horror. So
true.
We're living through the plague.
Yeah, I know.
That is true.
I know. Wouldn't we have all talked about Wanderers if it had come out in 2020?
Yeah.
Yeah. No kidding. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember actually talking about that in my Aaron Morgenstern interview because the coronavirus hadn't made it to the US yet, but like the news reports of it in China had just started to come out when I was talking with Aaron, and we both really loved Wanderers. And so we were both just kind of like, so have you heard about this? And like now listening back, I'm just like, oh my God. And actually it's funny because like one of the people who reads the audiobook of Wanderers is Exie Sands, who also reads Plain Bad Heroines. So just another little connection.
They did such a great job in both of those. Yes.
Yeah. I love Exie Sands. Cool. So that was a lot of books. So I'm going to wrap this up so that this isn't 2 hours long. virtual events are back. It's a new year, new events. We got lots of good ones coming. We, are still fully virtual. We record our events. They're up on our website. You can sign up for upcoming events on they're through Eventbrite. So keep an eye on our events calendar because we have some really fun ones coming. A quick reminder about our partnership with Libro FM. Our listeners who are new to Libro FM can receive 3 digital audiobooks for the price of 1 credit using the code LAYDOWN at checkout when they start a new membership. It really is a fantastic deal that everyone should jump on. We love, love, love Libro FM. They're amazing. All right. You can email us about the podcast at thelaydownpodcast@gmail.com. Our website is gibsonsbookstore.com. And we're also on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. And we'll put those links in the show notes along with all of the books that were mentioned during this episode. Thank you all so much for listening. Don't forget to subscribe so you'll know when we upload our next episode. And consider leaving us a nice review. Until next time, we'll see you in the stacks. Bye.
Bye. Bye.